You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Tumble out of bed and I stumble to the kitchen. Pour myself a cup of ambition and yawn and stretch and try to come to life.
Welcome back, Wisconsin. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. And as it's the 3 o'clock hour, not yet five, we are doing Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money, and it's always a pleasure to be joined by incredibly smart women who have so much to say on these super important topics. Mm-hmm. This week, we've been talking about global power and money and how wealth influences and controls not just institutions in the United States, but global institutions and our global economic system. We've heard from Oxfam's Nabil Ahmed about how concentrated wealth has really become the standard across the world and how many corporations are owned by billionaires and how global institutions are in many ways being manipulated and controlled by billionaires to serve their own interests. And we talked yesterday with Bob Lord and Scott Ellis about how here the institution of the Supreme Court of the United States is being, by many accounts, influenced, perhaps at best and at worst, controlled by the billionaire class. And today, I'm so happy to be joined by one of the world's foremost experts on international economics and globalization, something that I, as an economist, have always been interested in, and certainly as a lawyer and having worked abroad, has been an interest close to my heart. We're going to talk about what all of this means in a global geopolitical context. While that sounds obtuse, it's really not. And it has very, very concrete impacts on the quality of life, not just for the middle class and working people in this country, but across the world. Her name is Jyoti Ghosh. She taught economics at Nehru University in New Delhi. She's currently an econ professor at UMass Amherst. And in 2021, the United Nations named her to be on the High-Level Advisory Board on Economic and Social Affairs. And as a fellow nerd, I will say this. One of the most impressive things on your resume is that you are the Executive Secretary of International Development Economics Associates, an international network of heterodox development economists. I know those are that is an elite group, if I can say so. Welcome, Jyoti. Thank you so much for making time for us today.
Thank you, Maggie. It's a real pleasure.
You have spent basically your entire life studying exactly how businesses and billionaires accumulate and expand market power and then use it to consolidate within industries, whether vertically or horizontally, and use that consolidated power to influence politics. Again, how does that play out both here in the United States and around the world? And what results from this pattern of again, accelerating wealth, consolidation, and the exercise of political power as a result?
You know, Maggie, I think in the US, you're already seeing the results. You're seeing how most ordinary people feel more insecure, more fragile, more resentful, and how they then tend to blame it on others who are like them, really. Yes. On migrant workers or on minorities. Exactly that same thing is playing out in the rest of the world as well. And it's, in fact, it's actually worse. Because in the US, it plays out in terms of more insecurity, more unhappiness, more frustration and resentment. Maybe you don't get a job. Maybe you don't get the kind of job you would like. Maybe you can't make ends meet exactly as you used to. But in many parts of the world, we are talking about absolute hunger. We're talking about people who are reduced to starvation because of these big processes that are controlled essentially by very large multinational corporations and very rich people who, as you mentioned, can also influence policies.
Mm. So critical. And we're going to dive into some of those particular results that we see in the developing world. But extreme inequality isn't just a fairness issue. It can actually drag down entire economies, developing economies, of course, more susceptible. And by extension, part of what you study, Jyoti, is that when economies start to get dragged down and you see this incredible wealth concentration, the likelihood of dictatorships, of authoritarian regimes, of course, goes up. Explain this interaction, how this destabilization results from this extreme inequality.
So extreme inequality has all kinds of manifestations. As I said, it leads to more and more people feeling unsettled, insecure, unhappy, and of course, worried about their basic material life and existence. But it also creates a power group that can continue to manipulate markets, that can affect government regulations and laws and policies in their favor, that can change fiscal policies, taxation policies, spending policies in their favor, and basically make it worse and worse. And so it's not a surprise that in that whole period, the last 10 years, everybody has been talking much more about inequality, and it's been getting worse every time. Every year it is worse than the previous year, because all of these powerful people are economically powerful, so they can influence not just the politics, but the policies that will keep them entrenched in power. That means that as insecurities among ordinary people rise, they're looking for some solution. And so you tend to go for strong men, really. And I have to say they're mostly men, strong men who declare that, you know, we can change all of this for you. We understand your frustration. They will present themselves as outsiders when they're essentially insider and they're totally in with the crony large capitalists. But they will present themselves in a way that ordinary people just fall for. And we're seeing this across the world, of course, in the US, but in so many other countries.
Yeah, there is a cycle of exploitation that you seem to describe and that we're seeing replicated, again, at different levels of consequence to working people and frankly, poor folks. But the cycle of exploitation that really relies and then promotes from those that control economic power at a vast scale, having this influence on policies and politics and institutions. And many of these leaders that are cropping up, not just in the United States, but as you say, Jyoti, across the world, really—
My own country, yes, in India.
Yes. They appeal to this nativist, isolationist sentiment because people are feeling, correctly so, their intuition is telling them, I'm being exploited. Yeah. This is not fair. Yeah. Can you give us a couple of examples, a couple of industries where this shows up very concretely?
Well, you don't have to look very far back. Just look in the last 3 years at what has happened to global food prices and the associated hunger. So I don't know how many people listening know about the Sustainable Development Goals, which are these big goals that the whole international community, the UN, agreed on in 2015. One of them, the first one, was supposed to be the easiest one, which is get rid of hunger. And it's kind of obvious, right? There is enough food to feed the whole planet and more. We really don't have to have hungry people. Eliminate hunger. Everybody thought this is the easy one. We've got worse. It's actually increased. The number of hungry people has gone up by more than 150 million since the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic. And that need not have happened. That is essentially a result of exactly the processes that we were talking about. So what happened exactly? First, you had this pandemic, and that played out very unequally between rich and poor countries. Because the rich countries, yes, things closed down and you had to stop doing things. But, you know, there was a lot of social protection. In the US, everybody got checks in the mail. In many other countries, there was lots more public spending to balance out the fact that you couldn't go out and earn your living. In most poor and low middle and middle income countries, you didn't get that. You didn't get anything to compensate for your inability to earn your own livelihood. And so you got really lots of people facing extreme hunger in that situation because governments either could not or would not provide the minimum social protection you need to do. Okay, so you have the pandemic. Maybe after that, there will be recovery, you think? No, because after that, what do we get? We get the Ukraine war, right? So Russia first threatens to and then does invade Ukraine. And remember, Russia is a big wheat exporter, so is Ukraine. a big wheat exporter. So everyone said, oh my God, now the wheat market will be affected. And true, the global wheat prices shoot up. They like double in 6 months, okay? In fact, all food prices go up. And everyone says, oh, it's because of the war and it's because these two big countries that are exporting wheat can't export it anymore. That's not true. It turns out global supply was not affected. Global supply was the same. In fact, it increased over that period. So what on earth was going on? It was big agribusinesses. There are four big agribusinesses that control 80% of the global food market, food grain market, okay? And if you add a fifth smaller one, it's 90%, okay? They control this market and they just raise their prices. And nobody questioned it because they said, oh, sure, it's because of the war. The media plays a big role in this as well, right? The media kept telling us that, oh yeah, Russia's an exporter, Ukraine's an exporter. So it's all really terrible about grain exports. So they were allowed to dramatically increase prices, which affects not just people in the US and in Europe, but it really affects people in poor countries, okay? Now, remember, in addition to that, you have the agribusinesses making profits, but you also have these financial companies speculating in commodity futures markets. So you got a combination, like a really big group getting together to raise these prices.
We're going to have to take a couple messages, but there are these intersections between the financial industry and some of what happens with currencies, as well as these massive multinational corporations that control our food supply. We double down on that in the United States. We had egg manufacturers and other manufacturers artificially reducing supply to keep these prices artificially inflated. Jyoti, I have a name for it. I call it pandemic profiteering. There was no reason to keep the prices that high, and yet we stayed there. Folks, my very special guest, an international expert on economics and globalism, her name is Jyoti Ghosh. She is currently a professor of economics at the University of Massachusetts at Amherst. She's taught in New Delhi, and she has been named in the past by the United Nations in 2021 to the High-Level Advisory Board on Economic and Social Affairs. We're going to be back with more with Jyoti. Don't go anywhere, because it touches every industry that probably matters to your family's bottom line. It is Maggie and the Millionaires talking money here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
The Patriotic Millionaires also purchase advertising time on various civic media stations throughout Wisconsin.
See those dollar bills go swirling in my bed. I know they're stolen, but I don't feel bad.
Welcome back, Wisconsin and beyond. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We are in the 3 o'clock block, and that means it is Maggie and the Millionaires talking money. Today, we have a very special guest. Her name is Jyoti Ghosh. She taught economics at the University of Nehru at New Delhi. She is currently a professor of economics at UMass Amherst. She is the executive secretary of International Development Economics Associates, a network of international economists that study developmental economics. She's co-authored or edited 19 books. I could go on and on. The CV outstrips any that I have seen in recent memory. And we were just talking, Jyoti, about what happened post-pandemic, that these incredibly large 4 to 5 major agribusiness companies in the United States basically kept prices artificially inflated. A word for it would be price gouging. Folks in the United States certainly saw that. People are still angry about this. But you are saying it wasn't just the large agribusinesses. And I'll make a note for everyone. If you think this is just a recent phenomena, I suggest that you check out the Archer Daniels Midland price fixing scheme which was explicit and done internationally about 20, 25 years ago. So go check that out. It's happening again. But you were talking about this intersection between these agribusiness and the financial sector.
Yes. So really what happened is that agribusiness raises its prices, but also finance is entering the global commodity markets. And there's this thing called the futures market, where you basically predict a price in the future. So you can buy a futures at a higher price, which kind of makes you everyone think that you anticipate a higher price. What happened is that financial companies entered the commodity futures market in a big way and bought long and really pushed up the price. So when the futures price goes up, finally the spot market responds as well. So the current prices go up. And this went on for about 8 months until prices were double what they had been pre-war. But obviously there was no real change in demand or supply, so they would have to come down, and they did. So mind you, in that period, they're raking in the profits. Like, these big companies made the biggest profits in their history. In that period, so did a lot of the companies that were doing this futures market stuff, the financial companies. Then prices come down again. So by the end of that period, at the end of 2023, you're back where you were before the start of the Ukraine war, right? So some people said, fine, okay, prices went up for a while, but they've come down again. So why are you worried? You were worried because, of course, first of all, it did affect people while it happened. But in most of the world, when the prices came down globally, they didn't come down for the people in those countries. So, you know, the Food and Agriculture Organization, they have a food price index that came down by more than 12% in that period, between September 2022 and September 2023. But prices in low and middle income countries continued to increase by 10%, 15%. In low income countries, the poorest countries of the world, they went up by 30%. Food prices in a period when global prices were falling. So why was that happening? Because their currencies were depreciating. And why were their currencies depreciating? Because they were losing all this capital that was coming back to the US. Interest rates are going up in the US. There's tightening in Europe. And so all this capital comes back. These countries, their currencies collapse. They experience depreciation of 20%, 30%, 40%. So even the imported food is much, much more expensive.
It's stunning. There were countries that, due to their currency collapsing, as well as this profiteering, this war and pandemic profiteering, this price gouging, they simply could not import enough food to feed their country. Again, folks, we could solve world hunger. It is a solvable problem. And yet world hunger has gotten worse. And we see that even here in the United States, one of the richest countries in the world, we still have millions of children that are food insecure every day. I wanted to give you an opportunity to also address Big Pharma, because we see some of these also incredibly pernicious patterns in this industry as well.
You know, Big Pharma is the other really big, I would say, if you had to identify a few villains globally, it's out there, I'm sorry to say. Yet it's always presented as the one that's giving us these wonderful scientific breakthroughs. And so we should all be grateful because they're giving us all these new medicines, and where would we be without them? So here's the thing. One of the big problems with Big Pharma is that it benefits from this weird thing called intellectual property rights. Mm-hmm. So what's that? That's basically the privatization of knowledge. It's basically saying, I can take something and say it's my invention, or I can buy it up from somebody else and control it. And I will not give you access to the information that you need, the knowledge that you need to produce it yourself. So it's like creating a monopoly. And this is something that has become particularly widespread globally in the last 20 years. After the WTO had an agreement on intellectual property. It's called TRIPS, the Trade-Related Intellectual Property Rights Agreement. What did that do? That allowed all these companies to hold on to their knowledge, and all across the world, they would actually prevent other companies from becoming competitors and reducing the price. So Big Pharma, we saw this so much during COVID. Now, remember that we actually did a great job globally in terms of producing vaccines very quickly. This is the fastest ever that vaccines have been produced. So that's absolutely true. But why was it so fast? Because governments put huge subsidies to these companies. The US government alone gave $12 billion to just six companies. and in Europe as well, there were big subsidies given, mostly using public research that had already been done in universities and national science foundations, and adding a little bit, you know, that last mile.
Yes.
So all the R&D was covered. It was paid for by taxpayers, right? Yet, once you develop the vaccine, then the government helps you out by giving you very fast track clearance and approval because you need the vaccines, reduces the time you need to do the clinical tests, does all of that. And then it says you can price it at whatever you want and you don't have to share this knowledge or technology.
It is, it's really stunning. I'm going to cite from the most recent Oxfam report we discussed just a couple of days ago, quote, sharply increasing billionaire wealth and rising corporate and monopoly power are deeply connected. The profits of mega corporations are in turn used to benefit shareholders at the expense of workers and ordinary people. Folks, my very special guest this half hour has been Jyoti Ghosh, professor of economics at University of Massachusetts at Amherst, an expert in globalization and international economics. Thank you so much, Jyoti. We're going to make some of her work available in our show page for today. Do not miss it. When we come back, Dr. Kristen Lierley is going to join me talking about the double standards between men and women candidates. She's up for the 8th Congressional District here in Wisconsin. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
What is up, Wisconsin? Girls do run the world. And I certainly have one of them that I want to see more of and definitely running the world. Her name is Dr. Kristen Lierley. She's running for the 8th Congressional District in Wisconsin. Welcome back, Kristen. It's such a pleasure to have you. Folks, you can find her here every Thursday at 3:30 up until Election Day. You got questions for the good doctor? Great. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Thanks so much for making time.
Thanks for having me, Maggie. I love hanging out with you and Aaron.
Yeah, it's a gosh darn good time. And you have a big debate coming up.
Yeah, tomorrow, 7 o'clock, UWGB's Mothy Center. It's going to be covered live by WBAY, and it'll be streaming on their website. And we haven't had a debate like this in Northeast Wisconsin in a long time. Remember, you know, it's been pretty politically treacherous up in this area. So I'm really excited about the opportunity to talk about the things that I care about, what I'm hearing from people all across the district, and just to demonstrate why I am easily the best candidate to represent Northeast Wisconsin.
I'll jump in on that bandwagon because one of the things that has bugged me for a really long time, and listen, there have been rich Democrats that have run for office. I worked for one of them here in Milwaukee County. But one of the things that really bothers me, and there's now, it seems to be like an increasing pattern of frequency where it's extremely wealthy people like your opponent, like Tim Michaels, who ran against Governor Evers, like Ron Johnson, like the former MAGA president, that think that simply because they've got a whole lot of cash in the bank and off, you know, I explore every day at 3 o'clock on Maggie and the Millionaires, how the system is skewed to help rich folks and basically burden the middle class, that they think they can just sort of waltz in and, oh, I'm rich, so of course you should vote for me. It will be interesting to me to see how your opponent tomorrow addresses some of these issues. You have been on the stump talking about issues for a long time. But as we approached this debate for you, Dr. Lierley, it occurred to me a bit of reflection on the presidential debate of a few weeks ago, and you know what happened in the 2016 and 2020 cycle with other female candidates running for the presidency, and what I have experienced in my own career, and to be very specific about it, you know, I worked at some of the world's largest law firms, and at one firm in particular, I worked for two. before entering government service. At the second one I worked for, there were guys that didn't bill as many hours as I did, who didn't produce work that was equal to mine in either quality or volume. And they received bonuses that were much larger than mine. Mm-hmm. And I was always innately bothered by this.
Why would that bother you, Maggie?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's just how it is for the ladies.
Yeah. Just accept your 80 cents on the dollar. What's the problem? But I came across some sound from Representative Jasmine Crockett speaking about this double standard. This was in a House committee hearing on Project 2025. I thought we could take a listen to it because it's fun to listen to and get some of your reactions, because you will be a woman on a debate stage with a rich white dude tomorrow. And I just wanted to get your thoughts. Let's take a listen. This is Jasmine Crockett on September 19th in the U.S. House hearing on Biden-Harris policies.
The only reason we're having this hearing is because somebody got their feelings hurt in a debate. And I don't understand why we're wasting taxpayer dollars. Next time, tell your big boy to show up and be ready to handle the woman in the room who hopefully will become the next president of the United States. Nevertheless, while we do have two amazing authors from Project 2025, which it seems like everybody got the memo, like, yes, I'm a double down and say it's my thing, but I'm gonna make sure I also say that it ain't our homeboy's thing, because we know that it doesn't poll very well with the American people. Because the American people are woke enough to recognize that there is nothing good in it for them. And the final thing that I will say is that this election, I didn't ask you a question. The final thing that I will say is that this election is the best example of why y'all are so afraid of diversity, equity, and inclusion, because then you can't have a simple-minded, underqualified white man somehow end up ascending. Instead, you've got to pay attention to the qualified black woman that is on the other side. And with that, I will yield.
Preach. Wow.
can we hear the whip again, Aaron? Because that's just good. Yeah.
I mean, she does not mince words. And how beautifully stated. I know you've felt that way, Maggie. I've definitely felt that way. When I look at my opponent, I mean, he's probably a nice guy, but you know, yeah. Let's be honest. This is a guy who was born with a silver spoon in his mouth. His dad gave him a business. He ran it for a while, sold it, went on vacation for a year, and then just decided he was going to make public service his mission. But it's not like you went to the store and bought a public service mission kit. Public service is something that you do all along, and it's giving and it's helping, and it's little things and it's big things. And the fact that he and his cronies bought this Trump endorsement and they think that that's their ticket to buying this House seat, that alone is a giant motivator for me with my long history of public service. I mean, I'm a first generation college student. I have fought for everything that I've got, and my North Star has always been taking care of people, serving others. That's the whole reason that I'm here. So the contrast between me and my opponent couldn't be more stark. And it is so beautifully exemplified by Jasmine Crockett in that clip.
Yeah, it was great to see her at the DNC. I got to have a like snippet of a conversation you call walking and talking, where I just got to say, big fan, keep doing it. Love the hot takes that she drops, because it's just so accessible and relatable. And it is not surprising to me. Like, I have watched a lot of hearings in the House of Representatives, like far more than is healthy for any normal person, because I am a political junkie and a lawyer, and I love that stuff. But the fact that that one of the witnesses started to interrupt her, I thought was fascinating. I myself have had too many experiences to count where I get interrupted. I frankly now don't permit it on my radio show. And I do most of the interrupting these days because it's my show. But it conjured up lots of memories for me where ideas were co-opted or I was talked over. I'm frankly now at a point in my career where sometimes I will elicit the middle-aged white guy to put forward my idea because it's more important for me to get the idea out there and adopted. Mm-hmm. Than it is for me to get credit, but not all of us have those luxuries. I just wanted to get, you know, as you strategize for the debate tomorrow, Is this part of what you have to be prepared for? This talking over, this condescension, because it seems to be the brand of MAGA these days.
It is the brand of MAGA. I don't know that it is my opponent's style. I think that it's actually going to be a very civil debate. I think it's going to be very much about the issues, and I don't think that we're going to be throwing a lot of spears at each other. And that is what I hope for, because I think that that's what the people of Northeast Wisconsin really want to see. But, you know, going back to something that Jasmine Crockett said, how she talked about DEI is the threat. And it's the reason you're so afraid of it is because you know that you'll no longer be able to be the dominant voice in the room. I think that's entirely true. And one thing that I am so proud of that we have been working on up here in this part of the state is when we realized we were going to get fair maps because of all the work, all the foundation we laid, we already started talking to candidates more than a year ago. And many of these candidates were women who were activated by the Dobbs decision. And they weren't eager initially to step up. They looked at the legislature and said, that's not me. You know, typically, like, that is not I am not the person who is typically filling this spot, because it's typically an old white guy. Yeah. But the more we talked with each other, the more we realized that it is us. And we have more women running in Northeast Wisconsin than men, because we created that. And until we can do that all over the country, we are going to have to support, we're going to have to fundraise, we're going to have to elevate, because we have to work harder than they do. They are already there, and they're pushing down on us because they don't want us to achieve that same status. So we have to work harder, and we have to do it together. But we can do it, and we are doing it. It's happening.
Yeah, old rich white guys have always had affirmative action because they're presumptively the one that gets the job, gets the position, wins the election, does the thing, gets the big paycheck and the bonus and the CEO. I mean, on and on it goes. Folks, Kristen, can you tell folks where they can find out more about you and your candidacy?
Oh, absolutely. KristenForWisconsin.com. And I'm on all of the socials at KristenForWisconsin. And I love our social media presence. So find us on TikTok and Facebook and Instagram, because we are having, it's all volunteers, and we are having a blast telling people what we're all about.
That's the most important part. And I think you see some of that in Kamala Harris's campaign, when you're having fun because you believe in what you're saying and you're not lying every single day and making it up and gaslighting America or gaslighting your voters or the people that you want to speak to. It becomes fun because you're speaking to your fundamental values. We've got a question from Cam from Appleton. Cam, go ahead and say hello to Dr. Lyerly. And what's your question?
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I'm not too worried about your debate performance against Bobby Newport, but I do think that I have a fearful question, and I'm not looking for fear mongering because that's not me, but I have a feeling that because GOP leadership or MAGA leadership hasn't been going crazy in the last few weeks, they haven't been yelling or screaming as loud as they normally would or as much as I expect that they would, that they're just kind of settling in now, going, or like senior sliding, quote unquote, with the fact that they're just going to cheat anyways, and they're going to do it worse or more bigly than they did last time. You know, what do you plan to do in your position? Because I know in the DOT, for example, they have the NIMS test, and the NIMS test is like when nuclear Armageddon happens or something massive happens, that you have people who took that test fall into the positions for leadership roles for citizens. And I don't know if there's something similar in politics or not, or you know how I mean, right?
I think what Cam's trying to ask, and Cam, thanks so much for listening and calling, is there is a arguable assumption to be made that all sorts of malfeasance could occur after this election, all sorts of claims. If those issues come up tomorrow, Kristen, how do you plan on addressing them, Dr. Lyerly?
You know, all we can do is what we can do. And I'm really proud of the campaign that we have run so far. It's easy for us because when I talk about the issues, I talk about them from my heart. It is a truth, and the truth is easy to tell. I don't have to tell somebody else's story. So we're just going to keep working together, saying the truth, reflecting back what we're hearing from the people of Northeast Wisconsin, which is they're tired of politics. They're tired of fear and division. They want that neighborly feeling back. And I really believe we can restore that. But that means that we all have to pitch in. We all have to vote. We all have to help each other out. We need to be poll watchers. We need to be volunteering. We need to be talking to each other about the issues. There's so much that each of us as individuals needs to do. And we need to do it at a rate in a place where we feel comfortable doing it. But this is community building. This is democracy. And if ever there was a time for us to do that, this is that time.
Very brief question, Dr. Lyerly. If you clearly lose the election on November 4th, will you concede?
If I clearly lose the election on November 4th, I'll happily concede. And then November 5th, and then on November 6th, we are going to go ahead and think about what comes next. Because yes, this isn't just about an election. This is a movement. It's about the future of this country.
Folks, that's Dr. Kristen Lyerly. You can find out more about her campaign at KristenForWisconsin.com. What's the network that they can find the debate tomorrow at?
WBAY online.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Dr. Lyerly. She joins me every Thursday at 3:30. We're going to come back with some more thoughts of mine about this double standard. Infuriating. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm Bobby Newport. I'm not gonna stand here and tell you facts about what I plan to do to help this city. Vote Bobby Newport for City Council.
Wisconsin. Welcome back, or welcome everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I gotta say, one of the greatest privileges getting to do this work is being able to talk to incredible, smart, dedicated women that want to serve. Dr. Lyerly, certainly one of them. She's with me every Thursday at 3:30. We have guests from Emily's List who support Democratic pro-choice women on Wednesdays at, 2:30. You're never going to want to miss those. And I get to talk to people like the county board chairwoman, Marcelia Nicholson, who I consider a close personal friend, a life of service. She was a teacher before she entered politics. Tammy Baldwin's coming on the show tomorrow. What an incredible public servant. And tomorrow, again, you're not going to want to miss this. I've got historian Heather Cox Richardson, author of Letters from an American, an incredible Substack. She's interviewed the president. She's written numerous best-selling books. She helps put today in context, because as much as we like to think this moment is unique, we've seen these patterns before. And she really calls us to our higher angels. You're not going to want to miss that interview. Of course, I've also got Maggie and the Millionaires tomorrow. I'm going to be joined by economist Clara Matei. She is incredible. We're going to be continuing this discussion of global power and political power and how that gets wielded by the billionaire class and what that means for everyone. Let's take a quick call. Larry from Stockbridge, welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show. What do you have to say this afternoon?
Hey, Maggie, sorry I missed Dr. Lyerly, but I'm so glad that so many women are running this time around, and it's time for women to take over these positions. And I was just thinking, what you talk about at 3 o'clock and everything with the women, you know, having to fight twice as hard for everything, and maybe that chip on their shoulder is a good thing, you know?
I hear you, Larry. I very much do. When I was in graduate school for applied economics, which basically means mathematical economics, I was often one of the only women in class. You know, the sports I chose to play, rugby, I ended up boxing when I was in New York. The type of law I practiced, securities litigation, I was a trial lawyer. I still have a chip on my shoulder. I'm older now. My elbows are less sharp. I try to lead with kindness. But at the end of the day, I think a lot of that did propel me forward. But the idea that women have to be extraordinary to be respected, to even be considered for many, many positions, while mediocre, middle-aged, rich white guys get to fail up, is never going to sit well with me in the end sum. I think people deserve better than that. Businesses, boardrooms, shareholders deserve better than that. Businesses do better when there are more women at the boardroom table in CEO roles. And I think our government is better served when more women are at the highest levels of government. Certainly Dr. Lyerly, Rebecca Cook, also running in the, I believe, the 3rd congressional district. These are all exemplars of I think, women making it better. Thanks so much for your call, Larry. I appreciate you. Appreciate your listening. Drive safe, my friend.
Can I add one more comment?
Yeah, go ahead, Larry.
I took a leadership training session at the UW-Madison, and one of the professors said that, I forget what the percentage was, but like, these CEOs and managers, it's like 60% of them, once they get into the position, they're in over their heads. You know, and doesn't that sound so true with Trump and all these yahoos, Ron Johnson? It's just ridiculous.
Couldn't agree with you more, Larry. I think there is an element of the Peter principle, sort of you ascend to the highest level that you're actually incompetent at, in a lot of ways. And this is why I think women, when you sort of go pound for pound, pardon the tortured sports metaphor here, when you stack women up in terms of what they can accomplish, the collaboration that they can help catalyze to actually get results, whether it's for shareholders, employees, for me, the citizens and residents of Milwaukee County, when I was their general counsel, you see more results. This has been looked at by a lot of business schools. There's been a lot of statistical analyses. And again, I think the women being required, as well as people of color being required to overperform, is innately unfair. And it's not a result that I wish to see anymore. It's not a standard that I think we should maintain. But what I will say is, when I have seen people of color and women at the highest levels of leadership in general, and there are exceptions to that generality, I see them overperforming and generating greater results for whatever organization they work for. And again, government, no exception. Thank you so much, Larry. Listen, folks, we are in a moment of change. We are in an opportunity for change. And we are in a moment where that opportunity for change also means an opportunity to reaffirm our basic values and reaffirm the idea that reasonableness in government is what we must demand. Clear-eyed leadership, a perspective that understands the United States' role in this world. This is what each and every one of us deserve. And I hope we get to see that change, because it certainly sounds like change to me, on November 5th. You're not going to want to miss the show tomorrow. It is Fabulous Female Friday on the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm Maggie Dawn. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it's always better when we stand together.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.